The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 17 of The Catholics of Oz. Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Welcome to another episode of The Catholics of Oz. Thanks for joining us and listening today. My name is Lindsay Sant, your host, and joining me today is Jerry Trapnell. Jerry, how are you going?
G'day, Lindsay. I'm well. Thanks.
Excellent. So before we begin the show today, just remember for those who are listening that you can like The Catholics of Oz on the SQPN Facebook page. You can retweet our episodes on Twitter. Leave us comments, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast app. We're also on YouTube, where you can hit the bell. If you search for SQPN on YouTube, hit the bell to get notifications so that you can hear when new episodes are coming out. You can also leave us feedback on iTunes and other podcast directories and share our podcast with your friends and help us grow our community to reach more listeners. We'd love it if you could do that because it's always good to reach out and talk to more and more people. So why don't we begin, Jerry, with Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. If you come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jerry, we've got a couple of things to talk about in Faith Beyond Borders today. And I think we'll start with this topic. I wanted to share, 2 weeks ago, we had what we call a Catholic identity retreat day at my school. So basically, every year at my school, we have a day retreat for staff, and it's all about faith development, faith formation.
So just before you go on, what day is that of the week?
It was a Wednesday this time around.
And so what were the kids doing?
The kids had a day off, actually. The students all had a lovely day off.
So here's a behind-the-scenes peek, kids. Anyone from Prep Year 12 listening, this is what happens when you get the day off school for one of those teacher days.
Yeah, here's what teachers actually do. We weren't just sitting there doing corrections all day and complaining about being busy and whatever else. We do that when the kids are at school. this is a once-a-year thing. It's a retreat that we have. All of our students in different ways, shape, or forms also get faith formation-based retreats as well. You know, some are overnight, some are conference-based, some are, you know, we have a program where we send all of our year nines out into the bush for 5 days with guides, obviously, not just throw them out or whatever. And there's faith formation, which is part of that. So it's kind of a thing that we try and do across the whole school. But staff also get their day as well. So we've had different Catholic speakers across the years. So last year we had Sam Clear, who's an Australian speaker who traveled around the world to promote Christian unity. And this was a big travel where, you know, he got beaten up, robbed, starved for a while, all kinds of, wonderful things that, when I say wonderful, a bit of, sarcasm there. But, his story was really amazing. We've had another priest whose name was Ron Rollheiser, Father Ron Rollheiser. And he was very reflective, did a whole day of reflective theology. And so this year it was a little bit different. We had Father Rob Gallia, who we've interviewed on this show before. I think it was episode 4 from memory.
It was pretty early on.
Yeah, it was very early. And we'd interviewed him because he had just come back from World Youth Day, which was in January or February this year in Panama. And he had sung at the vigil night right near the Pope. And so we had a chat with him about that experience. Father Rob has also come to my school to do our Year 12 retreat as well. So we have him for a whole day with our Year 12s. And they love him, whatever their background is, because we have students of different backgrounds, mass attendance and things like that. But he has a good way of connecting to our students with his message. And we have lots of students who, even if they don't have a background in faith, they do hear his message quite authentically and they respond quite positively to it, which makes our lives as teachers a lot easier, especially in a religious education setting. But that level of communication also goes to staff. We thought, why don't we try him with our staff as well? He does actually do teacher conferences and things like that as well. So we thought, why don't we bring him in for our staff? Because only 50, 60 or so of our staff actually hear him at the Year 12 retreat. And we've got 200 or 300 plus staff at our school now. So we thought, let's get him in for the whole lot. The most of them will hear his message for the first time anyway. And so it was a really good day. I'll just mention a couple of highlights. I spoke to him in the morning when he arrived because I'm part of the Catholic Identity team.
Hey, remember me?
Yeah. Hey, do you know who I am? Yeah. I've got a podcast too. Actually, it's really cool because he actually remembers that, that we have a podcast, and he asked us how it's going because we kind of compare notes because he's got his own
Catholic influences.
Yeah. Actually, I encourage our listeners to go check it out because it's a really good show to listen to as well. So we do compare notes on that. We were having a chat, and you know, he was asking me how receptive our staff might be. He really cares about how receptive people will be to his message. And I've got to say, when he gets up on the stage, you know, or when you see his videos or see what he does, there's a lot of confidence in what he does, in his performance, in his delivery and things like that. Beforehand, he's a bit of a nervous wreck, and not afraid to admit it either. So I was having a chat with him, and he was really hoping that whatever he'd say to our staff would get across. And he was a bit nervous. And I said, look, the topics that you're talking about, we chose, because when you contact his office, you know, there was a list of about 12 different talks that he could give. So as a team, we sat down and had a look. And we said, yeah, these are probably the two that would resonate most with our staff. So I said to him, we've chosen these talks because we think that these are the ones that our staff need to hear more than anything else. So then, you know, he was grateful for that. He said, you know, please pray for me. And then it was time for him to go up and do his thing. And I just wanted to share a couple of quick things that he said that were that really resonated with me. He talked about his life story, especially his early life. If there was anyone who was going to become a priest later on in their life, you wouldn't think it was Rob Gallia. Father Rob talked about how when he was a teenager, he was not a good person. He fell in with the wrong crowd. This was growing up in Malta, you know, plug for the country that where Caroline and I and our family come from. But he was from the age of 16 and even earlier, into drinking, into drugs, into spreading rumors about people, into getting into fights, doing all kinds of things that got other people into trouble as well. He reached a point in his life where there were some people that basically wanted to find him and kill him because of some of the things that he'd done. And so he ended up running home, locking himself in his room, pushing his parents away, who were worried about him. And he talked about it being the darkest moment of his life, and how he was suicidal, self-harming, all of these, you know, all of these things that were, plaguing him. And he talks about his encounter with Christ in that moment when one of his siblings went with a friend to a youth group, and he said, why didn't you guys invite me? So he went along with them, and he said he sat in the back. He was the guy with his arms folded that wasn't interested in joining anything. Actually, you and I, having run youth groups in the past, know exactly what that's like. Maybe those people became priests, who knows?
We should go and look them up.
Yeah, we should find out. Yeah, it's probably a Catholic parish with them somewhere. And basically his conversion started from there. He said that seeing how alive these people were, he went back to his house, back to his room, and he put an empty chair in front of him and basically, you know, said, Jesus, sit down. And he started talking to this empty chair, talking to Jesus, you know, sitting in this empty chair. And also, he wrote about this in his book. He's got a book called Breakthrough, and it's a beautiful book that I'd highly recommend people to buy and read. He said that to us that when he wrote the first chapter of the book, which is about this story about his life and his suicidal tendencies and so on, he said that he shared it with his mum and said, you know, can you read this chapter and tell me if you think it's accurate, if I left anything else? And she said, what you don't know, Rob, is that when you were in your room and we couldn't reach out to you and we couldn't speak to you or anything like that because you didn't want to speak to us, we were outside your room praying for you the whole time, you know, praying and crying and hoping that you would be all right. And so he included that in his book as well. But really fascinating that his how his conversion took place. You know, A led to B to C and D. You know, he continued. He sort of started developing his music and a music career and things like that. And he ended up becoming a Catholic priest. At one stage, he thought to himself, I don't want to be a priest. I'll never be a priest. And then he met this priest that he says was this awesome guy. I think it was an American priest from memory. And he said to God, I don't want to be a priest, but if I would be a priest, I'd want to be something like this guy. And again, you know, he went down that he had that calling, and that led to his vocation. So he's been a priest for about, am I going to say 5, 6, 7 years? I could be wrong about that. But in that time, he's obviously had this speaking ministry, this music ministry, and he talked about those. But then he said, when we're preaching the gospel, stop pretending that you have to be perfect. Stop pretending that you have to have it all together. And he said about himself, he said, I don't have it all together. He said, I'm a nervous wreck. I'm this, I'm that. I worry about things all the time. I overthink things too much. You know, I'm a sinner just like anyone else. And he said, but you know what? This is my mess. And he said, all I do is I offer my mess to God. And this was the kicker for me. He said, and God helps our mess to be our message. And I was like, wow, that's so amazing and empowering for that thing. You know, and he's absolutely right. God can work through our mess and through all the unworthy things that we think about ourselves and help us to use that as our testimony as well. And he certainly was a good example of that.
Yeah, I mean, have a look at some of the folks who wandered around with Jesus in his time. Look at their mess and how that got worked through.
Talk about messed up, yeah. You know, one of them even betrayed Jesus 3 times. You know, how much more messy can you get, really? And became one of the greatest evangelists too. Even St. Paul. Actually, he references St. Paul. When St. Paul was saying, let me try, I think it was in Corinthians, although I could be wrong about it. I'm going to get called out on this for sure. But St. Paul says something along the lines of, I know the good that I should do, but I don't do the good that I should do. Instead, I do what I shouldn't be doing instead. And he referenced that and said, yeah, that's my story. That's our story. And he said, that's Paul's mess. But Paul's mess became his message. And that's for us too. The other thing that I thought was really good because, you know, we have staff of different backgrounds and experience. They're not all mass-going Catholics. We could never fill our staff with mass-going Catholics. They just don't exist. there are quite a lot of them, but there's no way we could have every person in that category. But, you know, so we asked for one of his talks about, it was called Religion versus Relationship. And so what he said was that people look at religion in a particular way today. Religion is a bunch of rules. And he goes, you know, the rules are things like don't have sex, don't drink alcohol, don't do this, don't do that. They think that religion is just a bunch of rules and doctrine and that's all they see. And he said, but religion is actually relationship, and it's relationship with a person, and that person is Jesus Christ. And without that relationship with Jesus Christ, those what people perceive as rules don't make any sense. They look like rules, but they don't look like the empowering, freeing way of life that Christ calls us to, which gives us a lot more. And he used this analogy, which again stuck with me as well. He said, and we happen to have, some flowers and roses and things at the front because we had this theme for ourselves, we grow together. And it's based on the parable of the sower. I won't get into that yet, but that's our school theme for this year. So we put, you know, it was spring, the start of spring. So people went into their gardens and pulled out flowers and other stuff. So he picked up a rose, and he said, like this rose, the rose has a stem, and imagine the stem is all the so-called rules and the doctrines and the moral teachings of the church and so on. He said, but then look at the flower petals, you know, that's the relationship with Christ. He said, but if you took out the stem, the flowers would fall apart, the relationship would fall apart. So he said that we need the rose and we need the stem. Because without the rose, the stem doesn't make sense. Christ is calling us to a better life because he knows that life is empowering for us. So really, really powerful messages. And it resonated with our staff. I have to say, just very quickly, Father Rob came to me. We bumped into each other. He didn't come seeking me out, you know. We bumped into each other again at lunchtime. And he said that a staff member came up to him and said, I'm agnostic, but I was listening to you and the things that you were saying made me feel something and I don't know what this feeling is and I want you to explain it to me. So, you know, he had a good faith discussion with this particular staff member. We had staff members going up to him at different times of the day, you know, asking, you know, talking to him, taking selfies with him. Of course, some was fangirling. I have to mention that too. But also crying and getting blessings from him as well. We had emails from staff members to our Catholic identity team about how wonderful he was, from staff members who are not church going necessarily. From one staff member who said, when he wrote to us, and he said, I fall asleep at a lot of the PDs that the school puts on. I did not fall asleep at this one. Father Rob was amazing. So, you know, the impact it was really good. And this is certainly a Faith Beyond Borders topic for us, because this is a person who can reach out to people who are not necessarily church-going, baptized or whatever, and talk about things in a way that makes sense from a human level. But at no point does he cut out the talk about Jesus. You know, does he reduce the gospel to anything? He talks about his love and his passion for Jesus as well as he goes through it. So, I thought that was pretty amazing. So I just wanted to also share that if any listeners are interested in more, you know, Father Rob content, I'll put a link in our show notes to a 10-minute documentary that he made called My Story. And it was either on the first or the fifth year anniversary, I forgot, of when he was ordained a priest. And he talks about, you know, his priesthood and introduces himself as well. Jerry, do you want to throw in anything before we move on to our next topic about in our Faith Beyond Borders chat?
Nothing specific about or especially about that, but it does seem we have had we've been blessed enough to have a couple of contacts with him this year, given his massive schedule, and you know how far he has to or how far out his outreach spreads.
Yeah, I should mention, because this is a podcast that is not just on the Australian continent, it's also United States and other parts of the world. Father Rob does travel quite a lot. He's requested everywhere, and he's had a lot of gigs in the United States and in Canada. And I'm pretty sure he's in the United States at this stage, talking to, again, teachers, students, doing, you know, rallies and things like that. So if you Google Father Rob Galea and look at his schedule and he happens to be in your area, I'd strongly recommend that you go. And if he's doing any underage events, send your kids along, because, again, he's really amazing in the way that he doesn't just talk, you know, he uses his music as well, and his music is very accessible. And he's got this really smart way about using non-Catholic music as Catholic music too. And the way he explains it is really good. I was watching an interview with him when he was in Canada at one stage. And the priest said, "Oh, let me tell you all a story about Father Rob. There was this time when it was at World Youth Day, and we had just told all the young people, you know, thousands of young people in the room, in the stadium, we're going to have some quiet reflection and prayer time now, you know, and that's what the bishops had asked for. So, you know, so he, on behalf of the bishops, let's have some quiet reflection." And he goes, "And now here's Father Rob Galea to do some quiet reflection for us." And Father Rob turned to this other priest and said, "I'm so sorry, Father." And then he started playing, there's this pop song called Dynamite, and he explained why he was playing that song. They're all up dancing and cheering and having a really good time. So, but he's really skilled and gifted at doing that and making those kinds of things faith events as well. So let's move on with our Faith Beyond Borders topic. And I wanted to quickly talk about today's gospel. So today being a Sunday, and today being which Sunday of Ordinary, millionth Sunday of Ordinary Time, I forgot. But it's basically today when we're recording, this is the Sunday where we hear the parables of the lost things, including obviously the lost son or the prodigal son. And the reason why I wanted to share a couple of quick thoughts and have a chat with you about it, Jerry, is because normally every year when we hear this section of Luke's gospel read at Mass, they go for the shortened version. So, you know, everyone knows the prodigal son, we'll read, you know, or the lost son, we'll just read that. But I was really happy that our parish priest went with a long version today. I don't think we can hack it, you know, we can handle that long version, because the long version actually makes the parable make sense. I think a lot of Catholics hear just the parable of the lost son, and they get really confused about the role of the older brother at the end of the story. But if you listen to the context in which that whole story is placed, the older brother makes a lot of sense. So if we just a couple of really, really quick points I want to make. This story begins with Jesus hanging out with tax collectors and sinners, right? So they were all seeking the company of Jesus to hear what he had to say. And Pharisees and scribes were complaining about it. And they said, you know, basically, and I'm paraphrasing, saying, look who he's hanging out with, you know, these tax collectors and, you know, and what is sinners and whatever. So let's think of people in our, you know, I'm not going to make a list of categories, but just think about people in our society who we would say, oh, look, sinner, you know, whatever else. So there's that instant judgment. You know, these people are on the outside. You know, they're kind of lost. And this is the whole point. Jesus talks about, tells these parables to answer the people who are complaining. And he talks about, well, let's talk about some lost things. And before he tells the story of the lost son, there are two other things that are lost stories. There's actually, this is a trilogy, right? This is your Star Wars trilogy, right? You know, you've got episode 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, episode 3, of course, is the grandest and most epic, right? The first story he tells is the one of the lost sheep. And we all know that one. Maybe we don't know its connection to the lost son. But, you know, you've got, 100 sheep. One of them strolls off for whatever reason. And it talks about how the shepherd will go out of its way to find this lost sheep and bring it back into the fold. So, you know, and our parish priest today was saying maybe these stories also explain reasons why people fall away as well. So, you know, this sheep is part of the fold initially and, you know, kind of sees things that look a little bit better and just out of ignorance wanders off.
Being a sheep, the grass is greener.
The grass is greener, yeah. Finds some greener grass or what it thinks is greener grass mm-hmm. and then goes for a bit of a stroll and disappears. Then you've got the story of the woman. Again, there's different titles and different interpretations, but the lost coin is generally the one that's talked about the most. So she loses a coin and she's going crazy trying to find it. And people ask as well, why obsess over a coin? Because for us coins, you know, like, you know, we've got 5 cent coins, $2 coins. Yeah, if we, the biggest value coin we have is a $2 coin.
Yeah, maybe if you think of it in terms of being a Bitcoin.
Yeah, maybe if it was a Bitcoin, yeah, all of us would be looking everywhere for it. But essentially, you know, if we lost a $2 coin, we're not really, okay, you know, it's inconvenient, but we can live without it. But in this story, I've heard scholars talk about how a coin actually represents a day's wages or a large amount of money. So clearly she's going to be desperate, you know, if she loses this. And what did we say was the possible reason apart from, you know, so we've got the sheep that gets distracted. What did we say was
I sort of thought with that one, you know, it slips down the side of the couch with the remote control.
Yeah, and, yeah. You kind of just let it go.
Ignorance, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So you just kind of let it go out of ignorance. You've been in for a while, but you kind of just let it disappear. And then it talks about the rejoicing when this woman realizes what she's lost, you know, the value of what she's lost as well, because there's a money value on it clearly. So, and then rejoices when she has it all back again. And then there's this story of the lost son, and I won't tell the whole story, but you know, there's a couple of things that stand out to me that I think are really powerful. The first one is that the son says to his father, you know, that he wants his inheritance. Now, when you think about this, in order to give an inheritance, you have to be dead. So in a way, what he's saying to his father is, I wish you were dead, because maybe you're holding me back. I don't know what it is, but you're holding back my life. You're the stem, you know, of, you know, right. There's that. Yeah, there you go. You're too much of the stem, like what Father Rob was talking about. And I want more than that. So please die so that, you know, essentially like that. So the father gives him his inheritance and lets him go off. Now it says that now he lives this uncontrolled life. All right. So there are all kinds of interpretations, but essentially he's off having a good time. He's clearly spending his money on prostitutes and doing things, you know, he's living the lowest base life that you possibly could, the basest kind of life.
Yeah. So the flower has gone off from the stem and look what happens to the flower when it does.
Yeah. Yeah. He's basically broke them apart and the petals are everywhere. It's, yeah. But the thing is, he ends up working with, like, you know, with pigs. Now, this is
swine.
Swine.
Gospel said swine.
Swine. Okay, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. Yeah. But this is significant because in Jewish understanding, especially in ancient Jewish understanding, pigs, swine, whatever you say, they're the uncleanest of animals. Like, you know, we talk about kosher food. It's free of, you know, animals' blood. You know, there's no pork or anything like that. Jewish people today don't eat pork, generally speaking, as well. So here, when he's with the pigs and he says, I wish I could eat what they're eating, he's hit rock bottom. Like, so he's lost. He's the lost sheep. He's the lost coin. You know, and he is, you can't get any lower than what this guy has got really in, you know, in sin and whatever else. And so then he realizes, you know, I've screwed up. And when he says, I'll go back, he doesn't expect to be restored to his original place as his father's son. He just wants to go back and be a slave, because even as a slave, it's better than where he is right now. So he's happy to have, you know, to give everything up and just be, at least just be in his father's house again, you know, as doing whatever it is. That's how desperate he is. So when he goes back, I think a lot of people talk about this. The father actually already knows he's coming back because he can see him. And the father doesn't wait for him to come back, you know, arms folded. Oh, look who's coming back now. Yeah, I was right all along. He doesn't lord it over him. He actually goes out to meet his son on the way and then helps his son complete the journey into coming back. And, you know, man, that's powerful already, you know, that you've got that. And so, yeah, they pull out the best of the best. So he actually elevates the son back to his original standing rather than just letting him be a slave and whatever. After the son repents and says, please let me be your slave. He says, no, you know, here, the fattest calf, you know, great big party, celebration, whatever else. And then we have this thing about the older brother. And the older brother, you know, he's saying, look what he's done. You know, I've done everything you said. I've followed the rules. I followed the stem. You know what I mean? I did all of this. And look what you're giving him. And it's interesting because the father says, my son, you're always with me, and what I have is yours. But it was only right we should celebrate and rejoice, because your brother here was dead and has come to life. He was lost and is found. I reckon if you take that line and go back to Jesus and the Pharisees and scribes now, and you know, they say, look, this guy welcomes sinners and whatever. I think what Jesus is saying to them, look, you guys, you have the Jewish tradition. You've got access to the temple. You've got everything. These guys don't. And look, now they're coming back. So they were dead and now they're alive, and you should be rejoicing too. That's kind of the challenge that he puts in there. And I think what's amazing is because we do see stories, unfortunately, where Pharisees and scribes judge the you know, sinners and make it hard for them to come back rather than actually talk about the mercy of God. And so Jesus is constantly reinserting God's mercy. And now notice that the condition of God's mercy is that we've got to be a bit sorry. You know, we can't get around that. You know, you can't just come back and say, yep, all right, yeah, that was bad, but, you know, just let me back in, you know, whatever else. We have to come to a realization, you know, we've got to, that, what is it, the 180 degree turn of the heart or whatever. We've got to have that movement of the heart to admit, yeah, all right, this way is bad. I prefer your way. All right, you know, I actually think the stem makes sense. I actually want that relationship back now. You know, I want the stem and the rose because I know that's the fullness of life. So I think there's a beautiful thing about the fullness of life in this gospel. And I haven't got time to go into the first and second reading, but I encourage people, I've put the link in the show notes to these readings. St. Paul has this mind-blowing, beautiful explanation that links to this gospel. And even the first reading and the Psalms have a lot to say about, yep, I was wrong and you've brought me back in and restored me and things like that. Did you want to throw in a couple of thoughts about this, Jerry?
Yeah, well, I suppose the gospel reading today is a really hard one to hear in a materialistic side of things.
Mm.
So you got a one sheep wandering off, well, you got nine. Well, who's going to risk the other 99 to rescue that one? It's a hard one to hear from a side that we're used to. You know, well, thank goodness it's only one. We've still got 99 sort of thing.
Still got 99. Yeah.
Send me the coins. Well, it's one. I'm missing one. I've still got nine left. That's, I suppose, our protectionist way of seeing things is, and I suppose it's in a way it's limited by that materialistic side of things is that. We're probably more thankful for what we've been able to retain rather than to look for what is lost. But I suppose,
it's almost like cutting your losses, isn't it?
Yeah. And on the flip side, though, I suppose a coin and a sheep aren't as important as a soul.
Yeah.
So we're quite happy to cut our losses on a sheep or a coin. I suppose there's a few, you know, this is also a gospel that you don't need to take literally.
Yes.
Because, say, we talked about the sheep wandering off. Sheep are known for following each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had one wander off, guess what? You're probably going to come home to an empty paddock because all of them would have wandered off, which I just thought was funny.
Yeah.
Just to have that. And I did, Father Michael, when he talked, I did wonder if he was going to sort of talk about the 99, because you hear a lot about the one in each case of these, because that's really what the focus of it is. But as Catholics and Mass-goers, I don't think it's too presumptuous to say that we spend some of our time, and hopefully a good amount of time, as part of the 99 or as part of the older brother.
Sure.
And like they say in the prodigal son, all that I have is yours. And hopefully we are in a position to be there sometimes, but I think it's important for us to hear it again,
yeah,
that we, there are times where we can be that one sheep, that one coin, or that younger brother.
Yeah.
We are not immune to that, and that's what we believe as Catholics, that baptism doesn't automatically mean that we're now one of the 99.
Perfect.
Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
That we are still human, have our own free will, choice, and fallibilities to be able to fall back into that sin, fall into a place there where we are not into a mess, let's say.
Yes, yeah. It's interesting that, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but this one sheep goes for a wonder. And in this case, the 99 don't even care. I mean, I wonder if that says something about our apathy sometimes as well. I wonder if that, I don't know, that's, you know, it's a, it, like, if someone was falling away, would we notice and do something about it? Or would we say, oh, well, you know what, they deserve it. Just let them go, like a scribe or a Pharisee, and just judge them off they go. They think the grass is better there. See you later.
Yeah. Or we could say that, thank goodness the sheep don't succumb to peer pressure and follow them.
Yeah, that's right.
This is why you're not reading too much into it in a literal
sense.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing is, I just putting the links together, going back to talking about Father Rob, in a way, the mess of the younger son is his message, isn't it? And it's a message for us. Okay, not a real person historically, the parable of Jesus and whatever, but Jesus creates a character in this parable whose mess can be a message for us, and a really powerful one too, about how we're loved and redeemed. Our parish priest, Father Michael, also made a really lovely observation. Now, you might have to help me with the language of this. He didn't say Jesus obsesses over us, but he talked about how Jesus loves us so much that he's not satisfied with one being lost, so cut your losses. Yeah. He's not into that at all. And in a negative sense, you could say he's, obsessive over us. But I think in the more accurate positive sense is he's trying to include all of us, and he wants all of us to be included in the life that he has to give. He wants to give us the relationship, the rose, and the stem, which leads us to the fullness of life. Yeah, I might be thinking about this for a while now. Yeah, but I think there was something profound in this gospel that I've heard many, many times before. And I think that just having that addition of Jesus hanging out with sinners and the other two lost stories, just gave me a bit more insight today. And I'm really grateful for that.
And I think just as a curiosity or a side note, I'm pretty sure we ended up having the prodigal son during Lent this year.
Yeah, that's right. We looked that up. Yeah, you had an inkling this morning that we'd heard it at another
this recently.
Yeah.
Because the only time you ever hear the word prodigal is it's followed by son.
Son, yeah.
And it's on Sunday Mass or wherever you read or hear it. It's,
yeah.
There's no other use of that word. It's owned by that section of the Bible.
Yeah. All right, let's finish off this segment. We were umming and ahhing about whether we should put this in the follow-up section of our podcast, but we thought this is too big a topic to simply be tacked on at the end, and we don't want to say too much about it, but in episode 12 of Catholics of Oz, we talked about the seal of confession and how there were laws that were being introduced into the Victorian Parliament, Victoria being the state that we live in, to mandate priests to report if they hear something about child sexual abuse in confession, which is, impossible for a Catholic priest because the seal of confession means you don't reveal what you hear in a confession. And I won't repeat everything we said in that episode, but, episode 12, check it out, skpn.com/Oz. Just go and have a look. But that law was passed this week, during the week. Which was sad for us, because it means that the Victorian Parliament kind of wasn't listening to what the church was trying to say about why this is an impossible thing, for religious reasons, but also for practical reasons as well, which we've gone into in past episodes. And also, I need to also quickly mention Let's Talk episode 53, where Father Chip and Father Corey also went through those reasons really, really well. So I recommend people to listen to that. So in the news, Archbishop Peter Comensoli said he would go to jail rather than breaking the seal. Archbishop Hart, his predecessor, had already said that as well. And I think that's pretty much the thoughts of Catholic priests around Victoria, probably even around the Western world, you'd probably say as well. They'd rather go to jail than break this seal of confession, for very good reasons. We wanted to highlight one priest, because in that episode, in episode 12 of Catholics of Oz, I mentioned that there was a priest who'd come to my school and spoken about it. That priest, I'll mention his name, was Father Nicholas Pierce. And the reason why I'm saying that is because he wrote an article in his parish bulletin. He also happens to be a Holy Family parish priest, not our Holy Family, but another Holy Family. And we'll share the link to this, to his parish bulletin. But he wrote about the seal of confession and what his thoughts were. Now, he wrote this on the, he said that the law came out, was released on the 9th anniversary of his ordination, I think around that time. So personal and professional reasons why he's kind of stuck by it. We're not going to go through the whole article, but there were a couple of paragraphs, Jerry, that you and I identified as probably something we'd like to share. So I'll just share a couple of quick points here. So first of all, he said, I do not need a law to tell me what my moral obligation is. As a Christian, as a man, as an uncle and brother, and as a priest, the very thought of abuse of children repulses me. That an individual would set out to harm a child, be it physically, emotionally, or sexually, is abhorrent. I do not need the government to tell me that if faced with the knowledge of these crimes, the only response is to report them to authorities to ensure that children are protected and that perpetrators are punished to the full extent of the law. So I thought this was powerful because what do you think priests, you know, or seminarians are talking about in the seminary when they're training to prepare for the sacrament of reconciliation and all the other sacraments? Clearly, they've been going through this, and as professionals, they know what to do. So to have laws to mandate that they should do this or that, in one way, is condescending. It's someone saying that, you know, priests don't know what to do in these situations. And Father Pierce did actually go through, and again, go back to a previous podcast, went through a couple of reasons, a couple of things that he would do, which are reasonable, you know, because he said, I may not be obligated by the seal of confession to have this outed, but I'm morally obligated as a priest and as a man to do something about it. And he talked about some possibilities. Even Archbishop Commensoli has also said some things about what he would do. You know, he's put that out in the media about what he would do if someone in confession, you know, confess these things that are now mandated. So I think it's important for us to, realize that the law, in a sense, is kind of useless and condescending as well. And it's very, very specifically targeted at Catholic priests. And I know that you'll say something about that in your section in a moment. Also, just very quickly as well, I said, but the fact is that this is not at all what the law intends to do, you know, to protect children. He said, this is under the guise of protecting children. Our government is seeking to infringe on one of our most sacred rights. For the first time in this state, the government is seeking to remove the protection offered to her citizens when making a religious confession. This right is something which until recently has been a respected right, not only of citizens of this country, but of all Western jurisdictions. It is essential that as Catholics, we are clear on what is occurring here and on the effect it will have on our rights as citizens to exercise our right to practice faith without fear or fervor. So, and also he says, it is also clear at this point that there is no reliable evidence to suggest that removing the seal of confession will make the children of Victoria any safer. And I've labeled these as maybe feel-good laws. They look good politically. The government's doing something about child protection. And again, when we get to your section, Jerry, we'll see that there are some massive holes that haven't been filled by the government and why this feels very targeted. The last thing I wanted to contribute before I pass it to you is that in a previous episode, I forgot which one it was very early on, we talked about the Israel Folau controversy and how he shared a meme, which was very, very incorrect anyway, about the Bible, and how he was fired from the Wallabies, the national rugby team. And people were up in arms about religious freedom. He should be allowed to express what he wants, things like that. And yeah, fair enough, maybe he should, right or wrong. But now, there are some Christians who are raising money and trying to start a sort of like a battleground about religious freedom, through the law and through the courts based on Israel Folau's case. I would say that Israel Folau's case is not as strong as this really targeted law change on which affects the religious freedom of Catholics in confession, because it doesn't just affect priests, it affects us as lay people as well. So I think that really, if we're serious about the cause of religious freedom, it should be based on the seal of confession, which I think is much, much easier to argue than whether or not Israel Folau deserves to, or should be allowed to say what he thinks he should be allowed to say. All right, Jerry, you had a couple of things about this letter as well, so I'll throw it over to you.
All right, first up, well, almost follow-up to that episode 12, one of the things I'd mentioned in there and was a little unsure of at the time was that a possible way or route to deal with it is if a priest were to receive a confession that did talk about child abuse, whether or not it would be permissible for them to, once the confession had finished,
yep,
whether they were allowed to go outside and, you know, follow it up with the person afterwards. And I wasn't sure. I thought, you know, is that cheating? Is it like a tax dodge where it's not really, yep, you know, unclear sort of thing?
Yeah.
When in his visit to, pastoral visit to our parish, Archbishop Peter Comensoli not only, and I didn't even raise it with him or anything like that, in his homily, he not only confirmed what I suggested might be a possibility, but he actually said, that's what I'll do. I will go and make sure, I will follow them up and make sure once I'm outside the bounds, outside the confessional, that I get them to repeat what they say to me so that I can act on it.
Yes.
Because, and it all makes sense. You know, we've talked about it in our podcast, so as Let's Talk, about, you know, the practicalities of, and how we'd all, you know, how that priest would actually deal with it. So, you know, just sort of a follow-up to that section. Now, going back to the bulletin, the section that I sort of noticed was when he had a meeting with the local MP, yep, Mr. Matt Fragon. One of the things he raised with him was that the government was seeking to extend mandatory reporting to include ministers of religion, but at the same time, lawyers or journalists are to remain exempt.
Yep.
And he says that under this law, as it stands, a perpetrator's discussions with his lawyer remain inadmissible in court, even if he's discussing crimes that he's committed against children. So we're getting to hear a bit of, you know, law for one, law for another. And I suppose it compares in a way to another, I suppose, high-profile legal matter that's currently engulfing Victoria. There's a lawyer turned police informant. She was basically known, yes, as Lawyer X. Her name's now public information as Nicola Gobbo,
yep,
or Nicola Gobbo, whichever one. In that, you know, a lot of her information that would have been privy information, she then passed on to police, which was used to catch criminals, you know, help police do their job. And the big furor about it is that she wasn't supposed to have that information, therefore is that information tainted, and therefore are these convicted criminals who are responsible for bringing in drugs, causing violence, and potentially death as well, now possibly get to have some sort of appeal. And if you compare that to the situation faced by our priests who will go to jail for a specific moment, it just seems a little messed up to me. I don't know. I feel like that's...
Yep.
You know, they want to have the legal system, and I think it's the Westminster system that we have, it, you know, should stand as something that can be relied on. But at the moment, I think it's in a bit of a... It's in a bit of a quandary about this.
Yeah, right? And he says something, and I think this was in the paragraph that you chosen as well, because he said, I suggested to Mr. Fregan that I would suspect that there are many more lawyers walking around Victoria today with knowledge of historical child abuse than priests, and it seems incongruous that the government was not addressing this at the same time. So you've targeted a very, very specific group to close a so-called loophole that doesn't really exist anyway, and you've left this massive gashing, you know, wound in the law that would allow anything a lawyer and possibly a journalist knows to not be mandated as, you know, information.
Yeah, again, I'm not a lawyer or anything close to it.
Me too.
I don't want to impinge on the fact that there must be some sort of confidentiality between a lawyer and their client. But in terms of the, you know, the solidness of the information and comparing it this specifically with, you know, from lawyers and journalists to priests, then to me it's almost like, well, what's the distinction here?
Yeah.
Both are being used as a confidential source to express or confess or whatever, and those discussions might include something like child abuse. It seems that one party is forced to share it with police or whoever they're supposed to report it to, and others are not, purely because of the letters they have after the name or the education, yeah, they receive, yeah, the occupation that they're in.
Yeah, so it seems out of whack. I guess lawyers can cry client privilege, and journalists would cry freedom of the press if any of that, you know, if any of those things were attempted to be changed by law as well. And did you have one more point from here as well?
Well, it's really his last paragraph, which I thought, yeah, people can go back and read the whole thing, but I thought I might just read through it because I actually found it.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's definitely a spoiler. I really enjoyed reading it.
Yeah.
So he finishes with, Let there be no confusion. I will go to my grave, protecting the innocence of children and ensuring that this parish and this church that I love with all my heart is a place of safety and protection for children and vulnerable adults, and that perpetrators are brought to justice and punished to the full extent of the law. But let there be no confusion also that I will go to my grave or to prison if it is so determined, defending your right as Catholics to confess your sins to God alone and to receive his absolution and mercy in the sacrament of confession.
Yep. Yeah, very good. Strong words, but necessary in these times to have, yes, a bit of strength of his conviction. I'm grateful for that. So this parish bulletin is in our show notes as a link, so you're welcome to open up. It might take... It's a PDF file, so it takes a, depending on your internet connection, it took about 2 minutes for it to load on mine. Good old NBN.
We got a bit of bulletin envy when we saw the size of it too. It's quite a large.
Yeah. Yeah. Ours is a photocopy page.
and it's a two pager.
This is like a little magazine. Yep. Anyway, so that's there. All right. So why don't we move on? And let's talk about apps and technology.
The Enterprise computer system is controlled by three primary main processing cores, cross-linked with redundant MeliQuartz RAM stack, 14 kiloquad interface modules. The core element is based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kilolaterals, 20 of those being slaved into the primary Heisentram terminal. Now, you do know what a bilateral kilolateral is.
Well, of course I do.
So, Jared... Oh, let's get a bit of background on this topic, and because I kind of feel a bit guilty because you got a bit sucked into this wave that hit our families, I guess. So this year, I've talked about Amazon Prime as a service in a previous episode when we talked about apps and technology. So let's talk about now how Amazon listens to everything that I say in my home, and maybe a couple of things that you say as well, and a few others. So they had a sale. That it's their, what do they call it? The Prime Day sale. Yeah. And it's kind of 2 days, a day and a half. And essentially, there are a lot of products where they slash prices, including their products. And so I'd been looking to sort of, automate my home, bring my home into the 21st century. You know, I've always grown up liking technology and gadgets and things like that. So I thought this was a cool opportunity. And so I saw that the Amazon Echo, In all of its different variations, the prices had been slashed to essentially half price and less, which was good. And also, because when you buy one thing, they always say, hey, maybe you like this as well. The Ring Video Doorbell, the very first edition, this is the battery-powered, non-wired to your house edition, they slashed it to $100, which is the cheapest it will ever be as far as I'm concerned, unless, you buy it secondhand or something. I had a chat with Isabel. I said, this is pretty good. Look what we can do with it. I had to convince her a bit. And I said, look, we can put an Echo Plus, which is the device with one of the biggest speakers. And they were selling it for $49, which is like stupidly, ridiculously cheap. And its output is actually better than the stereo I've already got in my lounge room. It was a stereo that I had since I was a teenager. So I said, look, we can put this one cylinder here and get rid of a giant, box as well as two giant honking speakers that are sitting there and save all this space. And, if you use space saving, that's always going to get a bit of thing. And she said, what if I want to listen to the radio? I said, well, funny you should mention that, because you can actually say, I want to listen to this radio station and it will play it. So I convinced her. So we bought that one, and then four more and put them right all over. So essentially all the rooms, except for obviously rooms like laundries, toilets, bathrooms, have one. And in the kitchen, we bought the Echo Spot, which is like the round ball one with a screen. And the reason I got one with a screen is because you can see through the doorbell on the screen of that one, as well as on your iPhones, iPads, and whatever else. So we went ahead and did that. But my binge didn't stop, Jerry. This is the problem. Once you start down the slippery slope, it gets very, very hard to stop. So we were out shopping a few weeks after that, and we went to Aldi. Aldi's it's a German chain that tend to have cheaper groceries than our big duopoly of shopping centers here, or grocery stores, I should say. And Aldi, what they do to suck people in is they give you a copy of their little magazine, with their best buys, which is like their weekly deals and whatever. And Isabel pointed at to me while we're having a coffee at the shops, and she said, uh-oh. And I had a look, and they were selling smart light bulbs for $16 each. I'm like, what? Let me have a look at this. So I had a quick look, And it was the company are called Brilliant Smart. I think it's an Australian company, but they essentially do the same thing as the Philips Hue, which is the sort of the well-known one. But they were much cheaper. Generally, these light bulbs are $40 each, but they were put down to $16. And so I went to the website's company, and they had them for 50 cents cheaper than what Aldi's discount was. So I said, yeah, Isabella, we're going to fill the house with these because we can have voice-controlled, phone-controlled light bulbs, you know, which is great. And we can change the colors and, you know, we can set up all kinds of, you know, automation for different things and whatever. So I did. And again, for a, you know, for a couple of $100, I filled the house with light bulbs again, except for the bathroom, laundry, toilet. I wouldn't need them in those rooms. And
where we are, right, where we are right now
has one. Yeah. Except my Echo. I've turned the microphone off so that I won't accidentally wake it up.
And we're purposely saying Echo rather than something else.
Yes. There are no A words during this segment. So if you are listening, worried that we might say something, we're not going to. So yeah. And I hope Echo is not your wake word because then you're in trouble. So we ended up getting these light bulbs, and they're actually kind of cool because, our kids love them. And Alexander, our one-year-old, loves looking at the light colors changing. And I reckon he's going to learn how to say the names of colors and recognize them just by what we've been doing. And interestingly, we put the light to green in our bedroom when we take him to bed, and he falls asleep a lot faster. And I don't know why, but the green light, and he's just like, gone. You know, it's great. So there's been some benefits. So you'd think I'd stop there, right? But I didn't, because I said to Isabel, I wonder if we can get an alarm for our house, because we kind of need one for insurance purposes anyway. So I was looking around. There's a company called Smanos, S-M-A-N-O-S. It's a European company, and they happen to have an Amazon Echo linked home alarm device. So I bought it, and it's actually really good. So you can tell Echo to turn your alarm on, turn it off. And again, I found a really good deal. I'm not going to buy it at full price because it's way beyond our family's budget. But when things are like, you know, less than full price, closer to half price, I'm like, yeah, bring it on. So, yeah. And so I have to apologize to you, Jerry. I'll do this on air now. Here's my public apology. Our father-in-law, you know, father of our wives, he is also a bit of a technology person, loves seeing technology. And when he saw that I'd purchased the Echo and the doorbell, this is while the sale was going on, he had a look, and he's like, well, I want this too. He goes, order one for me. And then our mother-in-law said, well, why don't you order one for Priscilla and Jared as well? So you got caught up in the wave, and I think it was Priscilla's birthday around that time, or
would have been close to that,
yeah. So it was under the guise of being a birthday present for Priscilla. So now we have three households that have at a minimum have a Ring video doorbell that's been drilled into our brick walls, as well as you guys have at least one Amazon Echo device, and I've got about five. So, Jared, what's your appraisal of all this wonderful 21st century technology?
Well, during that, I suppose, day and a half sale, we'd heard that, you know, you'd gone and taken the plunge, and I think over breakfast we were sort of sneering a bit, like, we're never going to use that, what a waste of money, blah, blah, blah. Come home from work that night.
Oh, ye of little faith.
And suddenly there's this black cylinder on my desk in our study. Like, oh, great, what have we got ourselves into? I sort of was a bit the same, you know, what are we going to sort of use it for? And to be quite honest, we haven't taken it as fully on board. You know, our lights stay the colour that we switch them on as. Although we have got coloured light bulbs that, you know, you screw them in and turn them on and they become coloured.
Sure, so yep.
It takes a bit more work to get ours to change colour.
Yep.
I suppose the kids have probably gotten a bit out of speaking with her.
With the device,
A-lady,
yeah.
With Echo.
With the A-lady, yeah.
It's funny because about a little time later, I think it was Secrets of Tech, I think.
Yes.
We're talking about the irritations they have with tech, and they were talking about their Echo devices.
Yep.
And I think it was Father Corey who said, don't make it ever play Baby Shark.
Oh, yeah, wow. Well, yeah. Yeah.
So James's first words to Echo were, hey, play Baby Shark.
Yeah, and that was it. And we've had that too, yes.
And what's funny, when I heard that episode on Secrets of Tech, more plugs.
Yeah.
When I heard that episode, and then they were talking about how they were having trouble talking to it and getting it to understand.
Mm.
Well, let me just tell you, the words you need to tell it to get it to calibrate your voice are play Baby Shark.
Gets that pretty.
Because it understands James, who's 4 years old and talks like a 4 year old, it understands him perfectly.
Yep.
So, Echo, tell me the weather. Play Baby Shark.
It's It's got a few useful. So look, I think what people use it for most, and I think Secrets of Tech talks about this as well, is playing music. You know, so if you've got,
play relaxing music.
Yeah, well, yeah. If you've got a music account, so say, because it links to iTunes, or so Apple Music, it links to obviously Amazon service, yes. Spotify, and a couple of others. So yeah, it can play your music for you, which is really good. But here are some uses I found that were also good, apart from controlling all my smart tech in my home. So I was sitting in this very office doing my tax, around tax time, and I had to calculate a couple of, sums and whatever. So instead of pulling out the good old Windows calculator app or getting out my phone, I just said, "Hey, lady, what's this plus this times this and whatever else?" And I was just getting all the sums done just like that. So that was actually really convenient. There's this mode that I didn't know existed. I don't know if we've told you about this yet, but I think it was last week, Alexander was asleep and we needed to turn off the lights in our room, and we didn't want, our Echo to talk really loudly to us and or to speak loud ourselves. So I said, "Hey, lady, turn off the bedroom lights." And then it goes something along the lines of, "You've just whispered. Would you like to enable whisper mode when you whisper?" And I said, "Yes."
And you said it or whisper it?
I must have said yes. I don't remember. just imagine that scene as you like. And so now when you whisper to it, it whispers back. So if I say, "What's the weather?" It'll whisper the weather back. Or no, if I go, "Turn off the lights," it goes, "Okay." And it's kind of like, it's bizarre but cool at the same time.
It's your own little secret.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, but there's a heck of a lot more intelligence in this device than there is in Siri on my phone. Siri is really good for counting timers and setting alarms and maybe telling me the weather, and that's about it.
Can Siri play Baby Shark?
Possibly, but you know what Siri will say?
Yet.
No, it'll say, "You have to unlock your iPhone first," which drives me nuts. The Echo can do a lot. And what's really good, I think, is that you can customize it with all these routines and with these skills that give it the ability to do what you want. As an information service, it's pretty good. So, for example, there's an AFL skill, so the Australian Football League, you can get the scores and whatever else, or, other sporting codes and whatever. So a lot of groups are really onto it, getting their things on there as well. So I'm interested to see what other skills they'll add. But day by day, I'm learning a lot more. Gaming. So there was, what's the game that I...
Robbery Bob?
No. That's a previous episode. No, it's a great game, by the way. The one by Bethesda that you played...
Skyrim.
Skyrim, thank you. Okay. So as a bit of fun, the Bethesda created a Skyrim for Amazon Echo,
really?
Where your Echo is the dungeon master. So if you download the Skyrim skill... you can play Skyrim and it will say, like, three orcs are approaching. What will you do? And you can be like, "I want to shoot my arrows or cast a spell." And you go on this adventure and it's actually not too bad. It's pretty decent. It's a lot of fun. So there are some pretty cool choose your own adventure type things that you can do with it as well. So, I'll sort of, as I discover more skills, I might share them on some episodes.
You're almost going to put Dungeon Masters out of a job.
Yeah, I feel sorry for some dungeon. The only downside is obviously it uses the Echo's voice and the sentence structure is not entirely natural yet. And so that can kind of take you out of it. But when it eventually...
And if you get a bad dice roll, you can just redo it if you're a human.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. But if it if they fix that eventually, I'm sure they'd be pretty cool. So, but Jared, your place as a very good dungeon master, I'm sure, is safe for now anyway.
Needs a human aspect.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
When someone comes up to you and when you're being a dungeon master and tries to give fairies gold, what do you do?
Thanks very much for that. Yeah.
Yes, we've done that once. Maybe we should do a podcast on that.
Yeah, there's a good in-joke there. I've got to say, Jerry has been a dungeon master for us, and Jerry does voices, and, Jared makes a lot of fun. In fact, we don't even get through a couple of minutes of the game because we can't stop laughing, So, yeah, we kind of have a bit of fun with that. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the Amazon Echo without saying the A word?
We should probably wrap it up. I think we're pushing an hour, so I think we've got a couple of bits of follow-up feedback and the like we should probably get through.
Okay, so let's move on to some follow-up. Let's throw it over to you first of all. We did an episode on euthanasia and how euthanasia laws were introduced into Victoria a couple of months ago, I think it was. And we talked about accompaniment and palliative care and things like that being better than simply assisting someone to commit suicide or end their life. And you found a really interesting article about what some Aussie paramedics in Queensland are doing. So why don't you give us a quick rundown of that?
Yeah, well, I would have liked to have found this at the time Because it had happened before we did the podcast. It would have been ecstatic if I was able to actually share this at the time. But subsequent to that episode, found an episode article in the Time magazine. It's which is basically paramedics grant a woman's final wish to see the beach. So essentially, it was in up in I think Hervey Bay up in mid Queensland, which is the sunny state of Australia.
If you want to go for a holiday in Australia, really, that's where you want to go.
Unless you don't like sun and beach.
If you
I don't know if you can swim in the beaches, though. So it looks
true,
good,
true. Yeah, sharks and
jellyfish. And I've experienced that.
Yeah, if you want safe beaches, come to Victoria.
Safe cold beaches.
Yeah, safe cold beaches.
It's too cold for anything dangerous.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, getting back to it.
Yep.
So one of the things we talked about was palliative care and the ability of us and other people to make sure the journey towards dying is a dignified one, as opposed to being one where it's a choice made. I've had enough, and I'm gonna, stamp my card. I'm out of here. And one of these, this article here talked about paramedics who are taking a lady to palliative care, where she was probably going to spend the rest of her life, essentially. And while they were taking her there, she had mentioned that she wanted to, one last time, I would love to see the beach. And they'd moved there with her husband on the spur of the moment, and now this is her, I suppose, her final journey. And that on her way to palliative care, where she'd be spending her life, the rest of her life, they actually detoured to a spot in Hervey Bay that overlooks, just the beach, and the beach is all the horizon. That's all you see. And, for those final few moments before she was essentially, she would have left her home and all her comforts, she was able to, have one last look at the beach, if you like. And they paramedics were even, kind and pleasant enough to actually, she wasn't able to get down to the water and to actually, gather some of that material up for her, just to give her, her senses.
They brought her some seawater, didn't they? Beautiful. Yep.
Which sounds, almost a little bizarre in a way, but when you think about what it must have meant to this woman, it's a little looking at how it affected her.
Yeah. If you can't physically go and touch it yourself, for someone to bring it to you is an amazing act.
So just really quickly, so this article will be in our show notes, and apparently once it was posted, it was people shared their own stories. So another one that's expressed here is that someone who missed the sunrise, so a nurse would go, she would approach the man and take him out to see the sunrise next morning, to give him something to look forward to. It's no beating around the bush. These people are dying.
But, they're terminally ill.
But it's giving them something to look forward to for the rest of their life, however long or short it may be.
And it challenges the disposableness or throwaway, mentality, doesn't it? That euthanasia
this is how the medical community or the medical industry, this is how they can do, looking after someone, not sticking a needle in a lethal injection into someone, but this is how them showing empathy. And that's really what it, what the article finishes with is, the officer in charge writes on Facebook, sometimes it's not drugs, training or skills. Sometimes all you need is empathy to make a difference.
Yep. Can I add to that very quickly that, even the Australian Medical Association, because this is a debate now in Western Australia, even they oppose euthanasia. And that's bizarre because this is a group that supports abortion and other things that we might have issues with. Even they're saying that they don't want their members to be able to do euthanasia and things like that. So that tells you something about what they don't want to see the role of doctors becoming, which is to administer death to
terminally ill patients. There really seems like a bit of a disconnect between some of the governing bodies in this country, not just in our in what we talked about with the confessional, but also about these medical side of things.
And they're frustrated that they're being ignored too, which is really interesting.
Not partly being ignored and partly being sold, this is what your role is now.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. All right. So, also, this always makes me really happy. We, every so often we'll get some feedback from listeners, and please, share as much as you can and anything. We listen to everything that listeners share with us. So I just want to thank William B. on Twitter. He responded to our previous episode where Caroline and I talked about death and about some of the positives that we experienced in the death of people in our own lives. That was our previous episode. And William B. said, great podcast. Looking forward each week to new episodes. Love the Australian point of view, like Father Roderick's The Break, Netherlands point of view. Sorry for your family's losses. So I wanted to say thank you for that feedback. Thank you for taking the time, William, to provide it to us on Twitter. And you're welcome to give us as much feedback and as you like. And, you know, it's a bit of a boost for us when someone, you know, when someone we haven't met gives us those kinds of things. I also mentioned in reply to him that we're also big fans of Father Roderick and, you know, and his shows and the work that he does as well. And so, yeah, it was great to just be associated with him, you know, hearing these different points of view. And also thank you very much for your wishes about our losses. We're always grateful when people give us those sympathies too. So thank you so much, William. Also, very quickly, kind of connected to this podcast, but more connected to connected definitely to SQPN. Let's Talk did an episode, I think it was two episodes ago from when this podcast is being recorded. They did an episode on holy relics, you know, about the veneration of relics, which was great. It was posted on SQPN's Twitter feed. You know, have you venerated relics before? Tell us your experience. So I shared about how the baptismal arm of St. Francis Xavier was brought to Australia and toured Australia. And it ended up at my college, St. Francis Xavier College, for one night. And we had it in our school's chapel for an overnight vigil, and how that vigil was always full of people coming and going. And I just talked about how that was a really amazing experience. We had students telling their faith testimonies and how wonderful it was. And just out of nowhere, and I'm really grateful for this, Archbishop Peter Comensoli responded and said, "You can thank me for that. I was responsible for bringing FX to Australia in 2012. And I actually didn't know that. So I was really surprised. I was pleasantly surprised, and just mentioned how grateful I was, because it was a really, you know, it was a very powerful spiritual experience. We actually have too, a piece of St. Francis Xavier's shin bone at our college as well. It's like in a glass receptacle. It looks almost like a monstrance I'm having a mental blank now. Use a monstrance for adoration. That's the one. Yeah. So I was grateful for him to say that. And we've got that, and we use it at our masses and other things too. So some great connections there. And thank you, Father Corey and the Let's Talk team for doing that topic, because it brought back some beautiful spiritual memories for me too. Have we got any more
time?
definitely no more time. No more bits of follow-up, do we?
I think that's a wrap.
All right. So thank you very much for joining us for this episode of Catholics of Oz. Before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Catholics of Oz. Today, we'd like to thank David P., Lizzie G., Philip S., Father Leo, and Derek B. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all of the other shows at StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Thank you so much for listening today. All of our show notes can be found, and also our previous episodes, at sqpn.com/oz, spelled O-Z. You can also send us feedback by using the SQPN Facebook page, which is facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, as well as SQPN's Twitter feed. And also, we have our own Catholics of Oz Facebook page, and you're welcome to join us there at facebook.com/Catholics of Oz, and join us to discuss our latest episodes. You can also reach us by email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Jerry, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Pleasure to have been here.
And once again, I'm Lizzie Sant. Thanks for listening to the Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.